Okay,
we are recording now on the second device.
All right, so we said a man's counsel is sweet to his friends. And so we need to keep in mind that friends accept counsel and they don't forsake friends who speak the truth to them. So if you're not willing to hear the hard things from your friends, then you are not being the right friend. And if we look at verse 17, it says, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. So that is what we are called to. And that summarizes what 4 through 6 are saying, and also verse 9 and 10. So we need to keep in mind a main point about friendship is that counsel and support is given in the time of need. And the last verse there, 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. This does not mean that you reject family in favor of friends. What it's saying is if you have a sweet friend close by, don't travel hours to go talk to your brother. There is a friend that is close that you should be intimate with as well. So it's not saying anything negative about your brother. It's just saying that you have a friend nearby and to enjoy the benefits of that friendship. What I love about the beginning of verse 10 is the command, do not forsake your own friend. So Mark and I have had several conversations about friendship. Is there any like accountability? If people come into his office, you know, they have a marriage issue. He has very distinct commands about marriage. This is what you must do. This is what you can't do. You know, these are like things in our doctrinal statement. But what about friendship? Are there like guidelines and rules? And so we've talked about this off and on probably since last summer. And as I ran across this, I was talking to him about it. And I said, this clearly says, do not forsake your friend. That is a command. And or your father's friend. Well, what's the point about a father's friend? Well, this has now been a friend for two generations. It's your father's friend, and you're in a relationship too. So this is a tested, tried, and true friend. And it says, do not forsake this tried and true friend. This is one that you can rely upon. And also about the neighbor is close and handy, then a faraway relative was also specified in 17:17. Sorry, sometimes my notes are out of order like you just noticed. You just keep rolling with me, you're doing a great job. A friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. We talked about that. It doesn't mean it's a brother born to fight with you, it means it's a brother born to be there for you. And everyone should have a close friend and the joy of a close brother, Lord willing. And then in verse 18, 24, a man of many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. So we are talking about dear, sweet relationships, which are possible through the love of God, his love being poured down through our hearts that we may share his love with others. So the best kind of friend you can be is the most godly version of Christ in you. That is what kind of friend you are. So if you have had struggles with friendships, there is a disconnect in your spiritual relationship and that needs to be evaluated deeply. So then the next section, 11 to 21 and kind of 22, is our second guidelines for friendships. Let's read those verses together. Be wise, my son, and make my heart glad, that I may reply to him who reproaches me. A prudent man sees evil and hides himself. The naive proceed and pay the penalty. Take his garment when he becomes surety for a stranger, and for an adulterous woman, hold him in pledge. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. A constant dripping on a day of a steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. He who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who cares for his master will be honored. As in water, face reflects face, so the heart of man reflects man. Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied. The crucible is for silver and the furnace for gold, and a man is tested by the praise according to him. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle, along with crushed grain, his folly will not depart from him. That last one is a hinge verse that we'll get to, but I went ahead and read it. So in our second guidelines for friendships, we see in verses 11 and 12 that a son's action reflects upon the father. And, where am I? So our children, their actions reflect on us and have an effect on our heart in gladness or sorrow. And in this case, it says, when you make my heart glad, I have a reply to those who reproach me. Then that sweet relationship, again, friendship within family. And then a prudent man sees evil and hides himself. So we need to be hiding from evil and not blindly, naively walking into it. That proverb there is pretty obvious for you. So we won't go into that too much. But there are some friends we need to avoid. And here is the first one. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard this verse. And maybe you have too, because you all chuckled. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. This verse has much deeper meaning than any of us have ever realized. This is talking about a overzealous blesser. I'm quoting that out of the commentary. They are overzealous. First thing in the morning, they want to just spout praises to you. And see, it says, blesses his friend with a loud voice. He's trying to praise. This is a hypocritical friend who's just praise. So loudly, so first thing, right there in front for all to see. And so we want to avoid a friend who is just overzealous in insincere praise. I don't know, in my house, that verse was a way to shush us down first thing in the morning. The second one is the contentious woman. Again, marital relationship, closest friendship. And here we have this shrewish wife. It looked fine when I read it in the book, but then trying to say it, that's a whole different thing. This shrewish wife is going to threaten ruin to this man. A constant dripping on a day of steady rain. Ooh, that's annoying. And a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand. So this is a sudden rain or a steady cloud, or a cloudburst that comes. It's unexpected. When we marry, we don't expect that we're going to be married to a contentious person. Usually you don't see that when everyone's on their best behavior, when they're dating and engaged. And so this is a woman who, or a spouse or a friend who proves to not be a good friend at all. They are contentious, and we are expecting peace, and we expect the home to be a place that protects us from life's storms. But she is allowing the storm into the home. And it's just like the wind cannot be grasped. She has so rejected the loving care of others and rejected the close friendship. It's like trying to grasp the wind. And if you notice, it specifies grasping oil with the right hand. Oil was valuable, and the right hand was considered the better of the two hands. The left hand is for lesser purposes, as they say in Africa. The right hand is majestic. And oil is expensive and useful. And so trying to grasp oil with his leadership hand, even so to speak, the best hand of this husband, is useless in light of a contentious woman. So we want to avoid the overzealous blesser friend. We want to avoid being that person, being the contentious wife, or being around people who are contentious, because it will be like trying to grasp wind and oil. So we want to find good friends, and we want to be a good friend. Look at verse 17. This is the kind of friend we want to be. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. We are sharpening one another for godliness. We are caring for one another. We look back in Proverbs 22, 17 to 21. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. The wicked is a ransom for the righteous. The treacherous is in the place of the upright. Better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. There is a precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. He who pursues righteousness and loyalty finds life, righteousness, and honor. So, you know, you may not have thought that your friend or your spouse was going to be contentious, and so your wounds need to be faithful as well to bring about biblical reproof to one who is acting that way. And if it is you, then to repent and seek change, that you may be a loving friend. We need to persist through constructive criticism. We need to let iron sharpen iron. That is a heat-induced process of sharpening. It's not easy. It would be an image, if you were the steel, it would be painful. It takes heat to sharpen that and friction. And so as we walk through life's trials together, that is how we sharpen one another. When we say a word in the right season, like the apples of gold, when we encourage one another, when we weep with each other and rejoice with each other, when we aren't afraid to say the truth, when we encourage and praise one another, when we give a sweet gift or set a beautiful table just to show love, these are the ways that we can sharpen one another. So 2 Timothy 2, 6 and 15. Oh, just a second. I'm going to read verse 18, and then the person I asked to do 2 Timothy. 18 said, "He who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who cares for his master will be honored." So what virtue are we talking about here? He who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit. We're not talking about the sluggard. We're talking about the diligent. That's right. Diligent work produces blessed fruit. Why is this verse right here? Any guesses? There you go. It's hard work to be a friend, to sharpen one another, to care for, and he who cares for his master will be honored. This is the idea of a slave serving a master, caring for the master, and that is where there is honor. So we need to ask ourselves, do you work at your friendships, or do you consider what your friend needs to be towards you? Which one do you spend more time thinking about? What they need to do for you, or what you're going to do diligently to be the friend? Most of the times in our friendships, I'm not sure we even think. We just are. You're like, I don't even know how we ended up being friends. Here we are. We had a great conversation one Sunday, and here we are. We need to spend some time thinking, right? Why am I friends with this person? Have I chosen wisely? Have they chosen wisely? That might be a good question. Why have they chosen me? You might ask them not to seek praise, but to find out. You might need to know. What is it that you see? Is it Christ? Please say yes. We need to evaluate. Do we have an idol of relationships? I always bring this one up because this is a personal struggle. Relationships are this huge thing because I'm this big extrovert, you know, and love to have relationships. So other people, they're like, eh. It's all right if I have one or two. Or this marriage, this is all I got. I got to cling to this. So do you have an idol of relationships? Do you have an expectation of your friends that they don't even know? That is where the idol is revealed, of your selfishness, your pride of wanting to be treated a certain way, or your fear of man. I must have X number of friends. Everyone must know. Everyone needs to know what kind of friend I am. Ask yourself, do you avoid taking risks in friendship and entrusting your heart to others? Do you hold back? Why? I mean, if you hold back outside these doors, that's probably wisdom. If you hold back inside these doors with your sisters in Christ, why? What are you holding back from? Are you afraid? Is there a fear? Is there, you have past pain that you need to deal with? Sorry, one of those iPad moments. So it's important to choose our friends wisely. We want to be very wise in choosing. We've read a lot about the kind of people we need to avoid, but at the same time, you need to fully know your friends will sin against you. They are going to, I guarantee it. How are you going to respond? They are going to fail you. I'm going to fail you. You're going to fail me. What are we going to do at that point? Are you prepared for the work that that involves? And then I have this line of emojis my daughters put in my notes. I'm a weightlifter. Okay. All right. Verses 19 and 20. As in water, face reflects face, so the heart of a man reflects man. Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied. So our heart reflects man, and if he's ever satisfied. And verse 19 helps us in understanding people. A water reflects like mirror, and our heart is a reflection of us. But what do we know to be true about our hearts? Deceitful and wicked. Who can know it? We're going to talk about that in a second, but I wanted to read a couple parallel verses here real quick. Isaiah 5:14 talks about Sheol and Abaddon never being satisfied. That's hell. Okay. Habakkuk 2:5.
That's me. Furthermore, wine betrays the haughty man, so that he does not stay at home. He enlarges his appetite like Sheol, and he is like death, never satisfied. He also gathers to himself all nations and collects himself all peoples.
So we have a picture here that death and hell are never satisfied, nor the eyes of a man. And it also, the cross-reference verse reflects us back to the discontent man who doesn't want to stay at home. And John 4:13 through 14 talks about what should satisfy us.
Jesus answered and said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of water that I will give him shall never thirst. But the water that I will give him will become in him a well of water springing up to eternal life."
Okay. And Philippians 4:11-13.
"Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me."
So the eyes of the unregenerate man are never satisfied, but the heart of one who is in Christ can be satisfied with little or much and have God's power to accomplish that. So just some references about our hearts and our contentment level. And Jeremiah 17:9, we just talked about, the heart is deceitful and wicked. Who can know it? We certainly can't know our own hearts. And I just read this really helpful thing that how can we have an idea about our hearts? Because in our heads, we play this little reel of our perfect behavior and our perfect words. But we could benefit by keeping track of our actual behaviors and our actual words. If you actually, you know, looked at your life more from someone else's point of view, looking at you. What did I actually do? What did I actually say? And then, because we just justify ourselves in our inner thoughts, you need to consider others' critiques. What are others telling me about my heart? What are others seeing in me? Having a willingness to ask. I have a friend who every time I see her, she says, "Tell me what you saw. Tell me what you saw in my parenting. What do you see going on?" I just get these little snapshots, but she wants to know what I saw, you know? And are we asking those questions? Are we getting other people's opinions? Do you have someone older than you that you might be meeting with, or someone, it doesn't have to be older, but someone that you're meeting with to help tell you, wow, you were just saying that and it sounded like self-love. Do you know you sound like you're in love with yourself? You know, so whatever it may be, other people can translate our words, and then we have to walk through that and find out if it's true or not. Or maybe you just said something really poorly. So we need to look to others' critiques of us, look at our behavior from an objective point of view, even consider compliments. What are people saying? What is God doing in you? Rejoice in what people are seeing when they see Christ in you coming out. And then, let's see. Boy, my stuff is so out of order. Was I awake when I wrote this? All right, we're just going to move along. That was a good quote, but verse 21, super helpful bookend here at the end. The crucible is for silver and the furnace for gold, and a man is tested by the praise accorded to him. Ladies, it is a test for our hearts when we are praised. How do you accept praise? What do you say in response? Do you say, oh, you're right, and even more? Do you do like the humility thing? No, no, no. You know, you won't take any praise. You can't even accept it graciously. That sometimes is just as bad. You know, you have to be willing to graciously receive people's comments and compliments, and it is a test to our hearts. Why? It's a test to our pride when we are praised. So some people are like, never praise me because you're going to tempt my pride. But temptation is not sin. It's when we give in to it and all we can think about is that wonderful thing they said about us. That would be where it would be a problem. So what we, and also on the flip side, the words, the things that we praise in life reveal what our heart loves. So say you praise wisdom, you rejoice, wow, that was so wise. Thank you for sharing that. You show that you value wisdom. If you praise immorality, you show that you prize immorality. And so what we praise reveals what we value. So listen, what is it you're praising in other people? What is it you're praising in your family? Are you praising your family? You might need to encourage them. Can you praise your friends when you see them walking in wisdom? So this is temptation, a test to our hearts, but that is something that the Lord brings our way. And how are you going to respond when you are praised? And then 22 is the hinge verse for this section. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his folly will not depart from him. So we've been learning about friends. And no matter how you crush a fool, his folly will not leave him. It takes divine grace to convert a fool to one of wisdom. And ladies, we were all foolish before Christ, and now we want to be fools for Christ, but that is actually wisdom. The Lord uses the weak things of the world to shame the wise, the worldly wise in this case. So we need divine grace to regenerate the heart of a fool, and that God is the only hope of being converted into a wise person. And even there's an idea here of disciplining fools in our culture, maybe prison. Does that make people come out sweet? Prison doesn't really send out sweet, soft servant hearts. It makes harder criminals. So there's just a true point in life that fools will never necessarily learn to be wise by their consequences. It takes a divine act of grace. Okay, we are going to look at this next section. Caretaking, verses 23 to 27. Know well the condition of your flocks and pay attention to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the grass disappears, the new growth is seen, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in. The lambs will be for your clothing, and the goats will bring the price of a field. There will be goat's milk enough for your food, for the food of your household, and sustenance for your maidens. Who looked up this section to see what it was talking about from the homework? Someone like to share? I labeled it caretaking. No risk takers. Okay, so we are looking at a section on flocks and herds. How many of you have flocks and herds? Right. Okay, so how can we apply these proverbs to our lives? Here we have a picture of human labor and divine provision. God is the one who allows the new growth, the grass, the herbs to feed. He created lambs to have this wool to cover for clothing, gold, or money from the sale, milk to be your food, sustenance for your whole family. And we see here too the crown. What's that talking about? It's a metaphor for an ideal ruler, a wise ruler. So because this is in Proverbs, and this is a poetic wisdom book, we know that this section has application beyond its specific reference to flocks. We are told to know well the condition of your flocks. If you are a caretaker of any people in this life, even the things that God has given you, materially speaking, you are to know them well, and this takes effort. Know and take care of their well-being. The master needs to be involved. You can't just pass it off to the servants. So it shows that one who is given much is required to know and care for their things. This section reveals energy, kindness, discipline, shrewdness, wisdom. And so this is just a wise caretaker. Mamas, it's very clear right now who you're the caretaker of. Do you know them? How are you walking this out? How are you caring for them? How are you relying on God for his provision? And then, so that's verse 23. And then the other verses just show us the wise behavior that leads to enduring godliness, the fruit of the Spirit, support from the Lord, caring well for the things entrusted to us, whether it's a job that we work, a husband, a family, friends, if we're single, all those different things. Just consider what it is that God has given you to care for and to know it and take good care of it and see it as what God wants you to be caring for right now. So verse 28, we're going to just look at briefly God's law as the measuring tool, so to speak, the measuring stick, mainly pertaining to wealth. Verse 1 is a bookend proverb. The wicked flee when no one is pursuing, but the righteous are bold as a lion. So we're looking, there's many verses here again on the wicked. And we are reminded that a frightened, timid conscience hinders your attainment of true wisdom. Are you living a frightened, timid life that you hide even when no one is pursuing? Because it says, righteous or bold as a lion. Why? We know that God is on our side. We know that nothing will come against us, that he is not in control of. So this chapter goes on to discuss the things that put certain souls into a frightened place. If you look at verse 18, he who walks blamelessly will be delivered, but he who is crooked will fall all at once. So our goal is to be walking blamelessly according to God's Torah, his law. And when we walk by his ways, what would we be frightened of? It's when we're walking in the darkness of our own ways, when our eyes are blinded and we're not walking within the light of his truth, that we find a frightened conscience. Faith is required, ladies, to not harden our hearts. And faith is required not to shrink back in fear in our walk with Christ in this life. So then in verses 2 through 6, we see the law and righteous ruling. Let me read the scriptures. We can at least get through that in this last bit. Verse 2, by the transgression of a land, many are its princes, but by a man of understanding and knowledge, so it endures. A poor man who oppresses the lowly is like a driving rain which leaves no food. This is the idea of a crop-ruining storm. The driving rain leaves no food. So a poor man, so he's already lowly, oppressing the lowlier still, is like a crop-ruining rain. Verse 4, those who forsake the law praise the wicked, but those who keep the law strive with them. So women, if we want to walk wisely, we are keeping the law of God. Verse 5, evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand all things. How do we walk wisely? By seeking the Lord. Verse 5. Then in verse 6, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich. He who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. Okay, poor choice of friends here. Companion of gluttons. So again, we see in verse 7, women who walk wisely are keeping the law. Verse 8 and 9, he who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor. He'll be handing it over because he did it wickedly. 9, he who turns away his ear from listening to the law, even his prayer is an abomination. So ladies, you may be a prayer warrior, but if you are not listening to the word of God, and listening, remember, implies obedience and doing, then you are not a wise woman of God. If you know the right thing to do and you do not do it, it is sin. And it doesn't matter if you're praying. It's just hitting the ceiling, so to speak. In fact, it's an abomination, which we called a stinking carcass idea. The hatred of that is an abomination. Let's read 9 through 12. Ten through 12. He who leads the upright astray in an evil way will himself fall into his own pit, but the blameless will inherit good. Ladies, a wise woman is blameless. So you're seeking to walk a life that is blameless. The rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the poor who has understanding sees through him. When the righteous triumph, there is great glory, but when the wicked rise, men hide themselves. Let's see. Verse 10 was talking about leading the upright astray and falling into his own pit. Someone had Matthew 5:19. Yes? Oh, okay. Maggie?
Whoever then annuls one another of least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven.
Good. Okay. And then it talks about, leading the upright astray in an evil way. So we have to stop and examine ourselves. Do we encourage others towards evil at all in our lives? I think for the most part we'd say, surely not. I'm not leading them. But do you ever encourage gluttons? That was talked about. How do we encourage gluttons? That might be something to think on. Do we encourage others in their greed for money and things? What kind of counsel do we give people in their decisions about this job or that job or buying this or buying that? Is our counsel leading others towards godliness or maybe to evil? We need to consider. Do we encourage others to evil in not listening to the truth? Oh, stop listening to that sermon. Let's go do this other fun thing. No, let's not do Bible study. Let's go do something else. Or you're encouraging others to evil because your own heart is apathetic. And then your friend sees you're apathetic and then everyone becomes apathetic. There are subtle ways that we can lead people into evil. Leading other people towards sin. It said leading the upright towards sin. So this is grasping someone wise and trying to pull them backwards. Or having pride in wealth, it talked about as far as leading others to evil. So the question then is, how are you encouraging others towards doing what is good? Can you think of something active that you're doing to encourage others to do what is right? Are you giving faithful wounds to your friends? Are you accepting faithful wounds to encourage them? Are you praising wisdom? Are you recognizing godliness in others? Wow, I remember a year ago, you were really struggling with that. Look at what the Lord's done in your life this year. It's a great encouragement, leading others towards good. Are you weeping with those who weep, rejoicing with those who rejoice? So just some things for you to consider. And then verses 12 to 28, let's read that section together. When the righteous triumph, there is great glory. But when the wicked rise, men hide themselves. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper. But he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. So we see a wise woman is confessing and forsaking sin. How blessed is the man who fears always. What kind of fear are we talking about? Fear of the Lord. So again, a wise woman is fearing the Lord always. But he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. Like a roaring lion and a rushing bear. No, thank you. Is a wicked ruler over a poor people. A leader who is a great oppressor lacks understanding. But he who hates unjust gain will prolong his days. So a wise woman hates unjust gain. A man who is laden with the guilt of human blood, murder, will be a fugitive until death. Let no one support him. He who walks blamelessly will be delivered, but he who is crooked will fall all at once. So a wise woman walks blamelessly. You know, the churches today, no, liberty, freedom, do what you want. God forgives, grace covers everything. Well, what about walking blamelessly? Let's rejoice in what's actually beautiful, not beautiful mess, right? What's actually beautiful? What's actually blameless? verse 19, he who tills his land will have plenty of food, but he who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty. Wise woman is diligent, according to verse 19. Verse 20, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who makes haste to be rich will not go unpunished. A wise woman is faithful and receives blessings. Verse 21, to show partiality is not good, because for a piece of bread, a man will transgress. Is a piece of bread worth very much? No. So this person's willing to sin just for a piece of bread. And that's the reflection back on showing partiality is not good. We're on verse 22. A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth and does not know what want will come upon him. He who rebukes a man will afterwards find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. So a faithful woman is willing to rebuke instead of flattering. He who robs his father or his mother and says it is not a transgression is the companion of the one who destroys. Man, this one is so ugly. Robbing his own father and mother. You're robbing your own inheritance? You're stealing it? This is not a sin? Well, he's a companion of one who destroys with that attitude. 25, an arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. Wise woman trusts in the Lord. He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but he who walks wisely will be delivered. So, walking wisely. 27, he who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. The wise woman gives to the poor. And 28, when the wicked rise, men hide themselves, but when they perish, the righteous increase. So there was a lot going on in this section. Poor oppressing others, that's keeping people held down, persecuting and abusing. This is an important thing, mamas with kids at home. When you see your kids acting this way towards their siblings or towards their friends and not allowing them to oppress others, to persecute, mistreat others, you just never allow it. You must always seek to stop it. You don't want your kids to develop this attitude and using it towards others. let's see, verse... whoever was reading Psalm 32 and 1 John, we're going to skip that for now. But if you want to look it up later, we were going to read Psalm 32, 1 through 4, 1 John 1, 6 through 9, which talks about confessing your sin. And he's faithful and just to the word just fell out of my head. He's faithful and just to forgive us our sin. Forgive. So then down verses 19 and 24 are focused on the diligence, the increase that the diligent receive versus hastiness. And we've talked about hastiness before, how the Proverbs tells us to put off being hasty, but to be thoughtful, wise, thinking, studying out. Let's see. Yeah, it's interesting that proverb on robbing parents. So why would you steal from your parents? Because you're trying to make your future better, but you're actually ruining your future because your parents' inheritance was your future. So it's the foolishness of the mind of one who walks in darkness is, like Jeremiah says, the heart is deceitful and wicked, and it will always lend towards that direction. So in summary, you guys did a lot of looking up about friendship this week. I hope you enjoyed that. Obviously, it spurred many of you on. I had some fun texts with people about it. We had a lovely tea because of it. But the important thing to note is, what is friendship and what is it based on? So what is friendship supposed to be based on, ladies? Right. Our love for Christ and our love that is like Christ. Agape love. Agape love is Christ died because he loved us so much. Love is revealed in 1 Corinthians 13. And in 17:17, it says, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. So a friend loves at all times, and this is the kind of love that is Christ-like. It's possible to have many companions, but no true friends, is it not? So friendship must be cultivated for it to have deep roots. Here are some things that summarize the overarching truths from Proverbs as far as friends. I promise it's not a 20-point list like I may have shared with you before. Real quick. You can jot this down if you want. If not, I can send it to you later. This is from my commentary by Warren Wiersbe. But like I said, the book by Amy Baker is really good as well. And you could do a whole study on friendship, and I would love to read what you learn. We could never stop. But he says that from the book of Proverbs, friendship needs to reveal loyalty. Remember, a friend loves at all times. So loyalty is found in 17:17 and 18:24. What else do we learn in Proverbs about friendship? It keeps a confidence, even when offended. So there's 25, verse, chapter 25, 9 through 10, chapter 11, 13, chapter 17, 9. What else could we guard or guide our friendships by? Controlling our tongues. Controlling our tongues will make for better friendships, especially when we're seeking to sharpen one another. Verses to look up for this: 11:9, 18:17, 11:12, chapter 24, 28-29, and a whole bunch more, but we'll stop there. An important point about friendship is to be honest with each other. We are to be honest and truthful. Ladies, we like to hide our weaknesses and display our strengths. A true friendship knows each other's strengths and weaknesses. And guess what? Your friend already knows anyway, if they're any kind of friend at all. So Proverbs 27:6 talks about this. Ephesians 4:15. Threw in a little New Testament there for you. Maybe you found that when you looked up verses. Proverbs 29:5. And 28:23. Two more. A proverbial biblical friendship would counsel and encourage each other, which we have talked a lot about tonight. So 27:9 and 27:17. We are to counsel and encourage each other. And the last one that Wiersbe pointed out was friendships exercise tact and are sensitive to each other's feelings. We talked about last week about not letting your foot off and be in your neighbor's home. That is a picture of exercising tact, knowing how much time to spend with your friends and how much time not to spend with your friends, knowing when they need a break and when they don't. When you ask your friend, please, can we get together? And they're like, life is crazy. Okay, I understand. I love you and I will wait to be a blessing to you. Chapter 25:17, 27:14, and 25:20. Now, one of my favorite authors is J.C. Ryle, and his quote that I found this week just, this is the kind of friend that we need to be and we need to seek. He says, let us seek friends that will stir us up about our prayers, our Bible reading, our use of our time, our souls, and our salvation. You want a measuring stick for your friendships? Here it is. Do you talk about their prayers? Do you talk about yours? Do you talk about your Bible reading together? Do you talk about if you're using your time wisely? Remember, lots about diligence and laziness in here. Do we talk about our souls and our salvation? This is a good friendship. So, we're going to close for tonight. Thank you for persevering with me every week. There's so much to cover. And we were going to cover three in 1 week. Yeah, that would have been ridiculous. So, ignore whatever the schedule says. Go by what's written on the homework. Next week, we are going to study chapter 29, which goes with the last couple chapters, the last chapters of Solomon. And then chapter 30 is actually written by Agur and the numerical sayings. I don't know if you've looked ahead or if you remember, there are three things that do this. Yes, four. There is one, there is two, there is three, there is four. So kind of fun. It'll be really different. And the homework will have you look at those things and try to dig a little deeper. So 29 and 30 next week. Then we're going to have Easter week off. And that'll be nice because it'll give me an extra week to really wrap my brain around Proverbs 31. When we get to 31, we have 3 weeks in April. We're going to do chapter 31. We're going to do 1 through 12, which is really only two verses on the excellent wife, 11 and 12, because the first part is about the noble king, and then we start on the valiant wife. And then we're going to do another section and then a final section. And there is so much, again, to teach on Proverbs 31, so much you've probably already learned. So I covet your prayers. And if you just have this article, this blog, this book that has just been phenomenal for you in understanding it, hey, help a sister out and send it my way. I'd be happy to peruse it. Because I've got like this stuff, but you might have all these other, you know, something that just really was really good, really changed your life or whatever it may be. feel free to send that my way, and I would appreciate your friendship towards me like that. I'm going to pray, and then tonight we're going to...